This week in your parents' basement, we're overthrowing a corrupt church and a corrupt nobility as we play Final Fantasy Tactics for the PlayStation by Square. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is the master of the Squire job class, it's Yule Hauser.
God, please help us sinful children of Evilise.
And our other co-host, he's throwing rocks to knock enemies off ledges. It's Todd Brisket.
I'm a mercenary hired by the Hokuten. I'm not obliged to show you respect.
Oh. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. You can also join our Discord channel by going to ypbpodcast.com/Discord, where you can chat with all the sweet baby boys. And as always, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link. You can find it right on the YPB homepage, ypbpodcast.com. This week's game is Final Fantasy Tactics, released in 1998, 20 short years ago. It is a turn-based strategy game with Final Fantasy right there in the name. It's a pretty solid game with a pretty epic story. You play as Ramza, and at various points you're trying to save your sister, overthrow an evil church, and untangle the crazy politics of Evilise. Now, I've played through this game 6 or 7 times over the years on the PlayStation and the PSP. Todd, what's your experience with this one?
Ooh, this is one of the all-time greats. FF Tax. This is one of the best of all time, one of the goats. So I played through this one when it was out on PlayStation. I had my old PS1, played through it once. I'm not as crazy as Steve. I played through it once and maybe another half time after that, a couple years later. This is one of my favorite, I have to say, fellas, one of my favorite games of all time, even though I haven't put in as many hours into it as Steve.
It's not a competition.
Sure, I had other games to play. I didn't have one game I had to play over and over. this game is a Final Fantasy game, and I'd like to hear Huel's take on it when he comes around. But this is a tactical game. That was a change up at the time. When this one came out, what was out? 7 was out, maybe 8, or 8 was not out yet.
There is an advertisement for 7 in the back of the manual, so probably just 7.
Yeah, just 7. This entree into the Final Fantasy series is completely different. It's a tactical overhead map game where you plot out your character specific movements and attacks. Not a traditional Final Fantasy battle system in this one. It's a non-traditional one. But for me, this is what sold me on it. I love tactical games. This is Huel. This is a XCOM with magic.
Yes. I was going to say this is XCOM of the past.
XCOM
of the past.
Yes.
Yeah, because we all know XCOM did not start as a series until like 2014. Like, that's one thing we're all clear about. So
yeah, that's the first instance of XCOM existing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so in this one, as Steve said, it is the story of Ramza. Another thing about this one, and this is also the reason why I like this first Final Fantasy Tactics FFT, the reason why I like this first one way more than any of the sequels, is that the story is slightly more darker and more realistic. Like, the enemy, the bad guys in FF Tac, they have their own, like, actual motivation. They're not just some ambiguous evil monster. It's an actual person you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of...
That's kind of why I like to replay this one was the fact that, like, each time I would notice a little something more on the story, because there's There's a lot of reading in this one. A lot of supplemental material you can go through and kind of notice connections. This is, I don't know what the TV tropes term would be, whether this would be a downer ending or a bittersweet ending, but it's not a happy ending entirely. So, we can talk about that in a little bit, maybe once we talk a little bit more about the gameplay. Huel, I don't think you had ever played this one before. How'd you make through it?
That's a good question, and it's interesting you say I haven't played it before, because I haven't played it yet.
Oh, what was that?
I haven't played it yet, because I could not get this game to work on my completely legitimate PlayStation.
Yes, you went to the store and bought the disc.
Yeah, it was scratched. The disc I got off of eBay was super scratched. So I watched some videos of people playing it, and I gotta say, watching people play this game is horrible.
Oh yeah, this is not a game to
this
watch.
This is no, I could not recommend that.
Watching people click through menus and move like a guy around a square. That's all you're watching.
It is torture. So, I wouldn't say I'm the most experienced at this game. I feel like if I did play it, I would like it. Like you said, it's XCOM of the past. It's less, it seems less magic focused or like goofy fantasy than the normal Final Fantasies.
Yeah, for sure. This is basically a civil war between two nations. And, like in Final Fantasy, the main series, the bad guys are all evil monsters and they're trying to rip open the world and let stuff like that. This is just like, oh, there's a bad guy, or not really a bad guy. He's just,
well, they're brothers, right?
A rebel and a kingdom. So, it's very non-magic based, except for the magic.
There's magic. I mean, there's going to be magic.
You have classes with the white mage and the black mage and everything, but it's not like a well of souls is opening up and we're all need to close that earth wound.
Let me agree with both of you in that the first half of the game, I would say, it's played pretty straight as far as tactical. But then in the second half of the game, suddenly there's much more of a focus on like these magic stones and a big old evil being awakened. So
how many scrolls are in this?
Oh, good question. Good question. There are no scrolls, I believe.
Ah, well, sorry, Huck.
Not even young scrolls.
No.
I mean, there's no scrolls. There's no older scrolls, but there might be some.
Oh, I got it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Young or old, either.
Yeah,
but
age scrolls in this one.
We don't know how old they are.
In this game, the scrolls are called Zodiac Stones. And so
it's called the Zodiac War that they're having.
Yeah. Kind of the rough plot of this one is at first you think you're just kind of involved in a struggle for the throne between the church and one of your brothers is kind of like backing the nobility, and they each kind of like have a proxy that they're supporting, but as the game goes along, you find out that there's actually like a secret sect of the church that's trying to collect these stones in order to awaken like this devil that they're going to cleanse the world with. So you're Ramza, you're going after this devil and trying to kill it because the host of it's going to be your sister. So that's kind of what you're going after. But meanwhile, while you're doing that, your childhood friend is a commoner and he's overtaking basically the nobility. He's overtaking the monarchy.
Is that Delita?
Yes, Delita.
Delita. So Matt Hardy's favorite video game character.
Oh, good call. But no, I feel like in a straight Final Fantasy game, Delita would have a last minute change of heart and he would support his old friend. That does not happen in this one. This game ends with, so Ramza saves his sister and basically just vanishes. Like he gets lost in history and he's not heard from again, him or Alma, his sister. Delita becomes the king and he stabs the queen. Like she attacks him and he stabs her. Cause she figures out that he just used her to become king. So that's how this game ends.
Yeah, I did. I watched the beginning and the ending just to get a grasp for it. And I had no idea what was going on in that last bit. There. Oh, yeah. I was like, okay, I get the hero kind of rides off in the sunset or whatever. People think he's dead. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then there was like an epilogue where, like you said, Delita just straight up stabs the now queen, former mm-hmm. princess.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't need her anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. You also...
doesn't have like... Forget the ending line. He says like, did you get what you wanted? Did you?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And also, yep. By the way,
what a this, great, what a ending to a game. That's just like the end. Okay.
Yep.
Pretty much.
It's like the a other Breaking Bad over here.
The other aspect to this is that you're joined at various points in the game by this guy named Olan. Who is a he's with the church, but he's kind of a good dude, and he helps Ramza. You find out that like he writes the history of this war, and for that he is burned at the stake by the church. And it's only
yeah,
like there are story like you can read like story aspects of this game, like there's like a glossary and like story summaries that you can read between stages. And you find out that's written by a historian named Alazam Darai. And it's an ancestor of Olan who found his notes after he was burned at the stake. So as far as the world at large knows, Ivelisse, like they just think that Rams is a heretic and that Delita's like a great dude. So
Very complex story,
mm-hmm.
and like you guys said, a downer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's bittersweet at best. Like it's good that that they kill the ancient evil demon. Like that's good news. But yeah, by the end of it, both your brothers are dead. One of them you have to kill, and as Wikipedia notes, Zalbag is then risen and converted into an undead servant and frequently begs for death during the encounter. So that's how you take care of your brother. And the other one, I believe, gets gut by Delita at some point. But yeah, it's bad times all around.
It's like you defeat the demon, but then you find out that the humans are the real evil.
Pretty much.
Hmm.
Yeah. Deep, I mean,
this is a deep story-driven RPG game here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Final Fantasy. I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of their thing.
The only decent human beings in this game are the ones that join your party, and even then, that's not a guarantee that they're decent.
They're just no names. You mean the other NPCs? Or are you talking about like the actual mercenaries you hire?
Oh, like the other NPCs. Like, well, some of them will play for your party, but one annoying aspect of this game is that because anyone can die, like in the actual combat, and you can just go on without them, it means once someone joins your party, they have no more story points. So, like at one point, like there's a holy knight that joins you, Agrius, who is guarding like your sister and the princess for a bit. Once she joins your party, she does not have a character. Like she just is along for the ride. No more lines of dialogue. So that kind of happens with everyone. Even there's a later character called Thunder God Sid, who is ridiculously overpowered when you get him, and he's awesome. and he has no more dialogue once he joins your party. So,
yeah, that's old Cid from Final Fantasy fame, right?
Yeah, there's it's an inside joke that there's a Cid in every game.
Oh. So,
every game, a spoon in every mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also one of the TV tropes things. The fact that by the end of the game, you're running like these, like Ramses killed like four or five like evil demons, and you have the most decorated war general of all time in your five, along with two other people who can like shoot flames out of their swords, and you'll still run into like normal enemies who are like, go get them. So
yeah, you
think word would get around.
Yeah, well, this kind of leads into one of my points, which is this is one of these reverse difficulty games where early on, when you don't have many people in your party, you don't have many skills yet, the fights are incredibly tough.
Later on,
when you get all these strong dudes, you become so overpowered that no fight matters anymore. You just spam your best spell and take out everybody.
Oh, yeah. The first time I played through this game, I was probably... I think I was like 15 or 16. And I didn't fully get like which attributes were important, and the fact that magic is pretty much worthless in this game. So it actually was pretty hard my first time through. And then the second time, by then, little site called Game Facts was really established.
Yeah.
And between that and just being more familiar, you know, it's pretty easy to exploit the combat once you know what you're doing.
Well, one of the things I saw, and I don't remember this aspect about it at all, is the what are they called, zodiac signs that each character has.
Yeah,
they complement each other, and that if you have a guy from one sign that conflicts with another sign, and he's trying to cast a healing spell on him, and they're incompatible signs, the healing spell has a high chance of missing.
Yeah.
So I never even knew that or paid attention. I thought it was just a neat little design on the background of their character sheets. I didn't know it actually factored in.
I mean, it's just like real life. I mean, you don't want to hire people at the job.
Yeah,
as like conflicting signs.
You don't want to hire an Aquarius if you're a Cancer.
No,
yeah, that's right.
Get this Pisces out of here.
There's so much stuff like that in this game, Todd. And also, like, this is one of the few games I can that's not like a Baldur's Gate kind of thing where magic can miss. Like, magic misses constantly in this game. And as a result, you just shouldn't use magic. Like after a while, yeah, you figure out that like the best job class as a secondary skill is chemist. And like, It's really boring, but you should just use items all the time to heal yourself.
That's true. I remember being heavy on the chemistry, and also ninja and archer. I remember those being the ones that just destroyed everything. Like archer, because he has the range, he can take out dudes in one shot. You have ninja that can has a lot of speed and a lot of distance on his walk, so he can walk right up next to a guy. Get a little double tap in on him. On his back. So those are the two that dominated when I was playing.
Oh yeah, ninjas can use double weapons. So basically, if they can get next to something, they pretty much one shot everything except bosses. So you can just really mess stuff up with them.
Yeah, unfortunately, they do have. I mean, we barely even touched on the classes. The classes. This is new to America at the time. I don't think the class system existed in any Final Fantasy game up until this one. At
the time. Just the upper class versus middle class.
Yes, classes that only existed in America, not in American very game.
Very familiar to America,
right?
Yeah,
but they have 18 different classes.
Yeah, they call them jobs. I believe
jobs.
It's a soft J.
Yes,
but the thing is, like, they have some cool ones. Every time I played, I always wanted to get a summoner and get that summoner leveled up so they could do some awesome summons. But they suck, dude. Their spells are terrible.
Yeah, Well, the problem with magic in this game, all the upper level magic, is that like if you're trying to use a fire 2 spell, it takes twice as long to cast as a fire 1 spell, or a fire 3 takes like 3 times, and some of the summons can literally take 7 or 8 turns, at which point, like, one, you have to protect your summoner for that long, and two, like, you could kill everything much quicker than that. So there's really no real benefit to the magician classes, like Black Mage, White Mage, Time Mage. They have a job class called Calculator that is oddly not horrible. But
yeah, I was reading a review somebody wrote, and they said that Calculator slash what is it called? Mediator is the other name for it. They have different names depending on which translation you're playing. Mm-hmm. They say that class is the most powerful class in the game.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because in the manual they list all the classes and their abilities and list their weapons, and the weapon for the calculator is a dictionary.
Yep.
And a stick.
They use books, I think.
But dictionaries are word definitions, mm-hmm. but he's a calculator. I'm confused.
It doesn't really make much sense. Like the way their skill works is that you attack enemies based on stats. Like if their HP ends in a 3, your spell will hit everyone on the battlefield that matches that. So like you can, it's very situational, but very powerful. But as a result though, like the simplest stuff in this game is normally the most effective. Like the other reason the chemist class is really powerful is that they can use guns, and the guns don't do as much damage, but they have like a range of like 7 or 8 squares. So you can just hang out like in a safe area and just chip away at the enemy and kill them as they walk single file up to you. So that's guns are overpowered, and once you get to chapter 2, you get Agrius, who has sword skills, which are, those are really overpowered. So you get like 4 or 5 unique characters that all have sword skills, and they're all pretty excellent. So,
like, what about No, you were actually finishing something.
Oh, one of them's named Melodial, I think is her name, who you get in chapter 4 or 5. All of her skills break the enemy's equipment. So even if you don't kill them with that, like you can break their sword with her attack, and it's like, oh well, I guess you can't hurt me. So it's once you get a little deeper in this game and know how the mechanics work, like there is no challenge. So you get that to look forward to, Huel, if you do ever play it.
Yeah, if I get a new disc. I was going to ask, what about the Oracle class also uses a dictionary? I was wondering if that one was powerful.
Oh, that is...
They deteriorate enemy forces by causing status abnormalities.
I feel like that might be a specialty class that only one character has, and yes, he is ridiculously powerful.
Well, there you go.
I think that's Olan's class. So
they command yin yang magic.
Oh, well. I might be thinking of something else.
Oh, but it seems like this game is just trying to get kids to read more. It's like the most powerful ones use books.
Mm-hmm.
Nice try, Final Fantasy.
We're not falling for that. Oh no, I remember the Oracle class now. Yeah, it's not that great.
Never mind.
I mean, it's better than a lot of the other magical classes, but it's still not better than just being a chemist or like, yeah, you know.
I don't remember being impressed with it.
Yeah.
Try again. Or
like, Yeah, most of the physical classes in this game are pretty good just because, like, your equipment is also limited by your class. So, like, all of the decent armors, you have to be a, like, basically a knight to use. Or if you want to use a shield. So, yes. Oron has a move called Celestial Stasis, which you only have him for one fight, and it basically casts stop on every enemy. Like, they can't move, and you can just beat the crap out of them. So his job is astrologer.
Nice.
Good time.
Also, they do have Time Mage, which was a heavy rotation when I played, just because they have haste, and they do get stop eventually, which are pretty powerful spells. If you have a ninja with you, cast some haste on him. He's zooming around everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So it sounds like I really love this game, obviously. Just to touch on where it is now, it had a remake in 2007 for the PSP. It added full motion videos and a few new special characters, and it smoothed out the translation. They actually did a completely new translation for this one. That version was also ported to phones in 2011 and 2015. There are also two spin-off games for the Game Boy Advance and the Nintendo DS, but the series has been dormant since 2007. So, that's kind of where it's at now. Todd, did you ever play Final Fantasy Tactics Advance or anything like that?
I did, yeah. I played both of the sequels. Not really sequels. They're, you know, I guess indirect sequels. But I did not enjoy them as much as the original one. It got a lot more fantastical. I hated the judge system that they added in those games, where basically it changes a rule or two or three in the match, whatever it is. It's weird. It's like you're fighting like little demons, but this judge will come out of nowhere and say, "Hey, for this match, if you cast fire, it's going to reflect and cast fire on yourself." Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is it Judge Reinhold?
The Judge Reinhold system.
Yeah.
My name is Judge.
That would have been a lot better if they had Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold Tactics.
Yeah. Well, I like that one.
I like
it. Perfect.
Oh, God.
I'm with you, Todd. Like the Tactics Advance series, you know, there's two of them games, and I don't know, they're just okay. Like, to me, like they're sad, but they're not as like dark and gritty as the old Final Fantasy Tactics there, and they just have a completely different feel. Like,
yeah, it's a different feel. It's like, I mean, same strategy style gameplay, but it just feels different.
Yeah, like Final Fantasy Tactics was kind of like Square's take or ripoff of Ogre Battle in a way, whereas Tactics Advance feels more like, I don't know, Fire Emblem or Advance Wars or something like that. Like, it feels...
Yeah, I'm with you on that comparison, yeah.
Yeah, they're on the Game Boy Advance, and they feel like a turn-based Game Boy Advance game for all that means. So... I don't know. Like if you're really jonesing for Final Fantasy Tactics, I guess you can play those games too, but you don't really have to. So, well, I think it's, I have been sent something from Huel for a very important segment that we're going to do right now. Todd, how many DuckTales for Final Fantasy Tactics?
Ooh, this is a very important, thing that has come up called the DuckTales skill, and it factors in two things, primarily nostalgia and replayability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nostalgia, I got a lot of nostalgia for this one. This is one of the GOATs, as I said before. This is one of my favorite PlayStation games. Probably I'm gonna put it at number two behind Sympathy of the Night.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. gonna have to.
You had Resiville 2 pretty high up too.
No, that one. So that one is a one that's high up there. But as I said in last week's episode, it's number one for a lot of people, not necessarily.
Oh, not necessarily yourself. I understand. Okay. Continue.
Yeah, so nostalgia way up there. Replayability. I think this does have pretty good replayability. There's a lot of different classes you can explore. A lot of hidden stuff you can unlock. One thing we didn't even mention, Cloud Strife. A character you can collect in this game.
Really?
A secret character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's got a lot of...
He's also awful. Like, there's no point in using him.
It's a novelty.
Yeah, he's a novelty. He's a tie-in to get sales. So that all being said, I'm going to have to plug this one in with a .93 DuckTales.
Oh, wow.
Way higher than I thought.
Yeah, Huel shot way low.
Oh, no way, but... Well, I did just say that, but...
.7 was the guess for me.
That's not what I sent. I said .8.
Oh, was it .8? Yeah, it was .8.
It's weird how you can't read that.
Get the dictionary out. Where's that calculator guy? Yeah, .8 was my guess. So close. Closer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy.
Oh, man. Well, that brings us to our other regular segment. Huel, how is the manual for this one?
Well, this is back-to-back PlayStation manuals, and unfortunately this one is also in black and white, which I just find unacceptable at this point in the gaming lore. But, gotta say, there's a lot of words here. A lot of reading, very detailed, but there are good illustrations, a lot of fun pictures. I mean, it's got to be detailed because this is such a detail oriented game. It's very deep. It's there's so much to it. So you can't blame it. Like, you want to be able to tell the user what the hell to do. Mm-hmm. It gives like very little enemies, but there's probably so many enemies that they can't list them all. But the job section really brings it up. It lists like all the different jobs, which are classes, of course, gives illustrations of them. I think that section alone brings it up a little bit. It gives some backstory and the two main characters and like the conflict and everything. Balancing that with how much reading there is, I got to give it 2.5 Mario 2s. It's bordering on 2, but looking back through, there's enough there to bring it up to 2.5.
Yeah, it's got the content, just not the flair.
Yeah, it can be formatted a little better. Maybe edited, trim some of those words out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to see that many.
Oh, I can't even remember the manual for this one. Like, I know I've read it at some point, but
sure,
it was not a big deal for me.
Luckily, when I got the game, the manual was intact, but the disc was just scratched.
Oh, too bad. This, speaking of again, this game. This is a game that once sold for over $100 because the initial run was not that many copies. Like, it came out, it was kind of like a cult classic for a little bit. Then finally, toward the end of the PlayStation's lifespan, it got a greatest hits re-release. And at this point, I think it still sells for a decent amount of money. But it's available on a variety of platforms, as we mentioned. So, it's not too much to find this one now.
Yep.
So, looking at it, wow. This one has really lost value. According to price charting, it now sells for $8 to $18.
Man, if you're one of those people that paid $100, you're probably just like, what am I doing? What have I done?
I think I paid like $30 or $40 for it, but that I got it new when it new in a store. It had still been out for like a year or two at that point. But
yeah, I got mine. Yep. Got my full retail, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the I would actually recommend if you want to play this one, get the PSP version if you're choosing between that and the PlayStation version, because the PSP version is just it's got some nicer features and the translation is better, because the original translation for this one is just a lot of English in certain places. So you know,
and that's the same version that they put on the phone.
Yes, as far as I could tell, that the phone version is the War of the Lions is the re-release that they did. So, well, Huel, was there anything else you wanted to say about this one?
Having mostly just watched the cutscenes in this,
mm-hmm.
and I mean they call it the War of the Lions, but they also call it the Zodiac Brave story. So, like, what's going on with that? Which is it? can we make a decision?
Well,
any thoughts?
They refer to...
What is the Zodiac Brave story? I don't understand.
Well, the Zodiac Stones is what they're going after. And I think Brave is like another name for Knight, which I took to mean like the holders of the stones. So you...
Oh.
In the course of this game, you do kind of...
Holders of the stones.
Like in the course of this game, you do find like all the Zodiac stones. I think there's like 12 of them.
Well, there's 12 Zodiacs.
Yeah. Oh, that would make sense then. But the other thing is, the War of the Lions refers to like the two warring factions in this game. The ones backing the church, and the ones backing the prince. I don't know.
That part I got because it was in the manual. Like that's the Civil War at hand. It's the two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But
and to be honest,
the game starts up and they call it the Zodiac Brave story. I'm like, well, get it straight, FF Tax.
Yeah. And also the political intrigue stuff. You know, I've played through this game a lot, and even I will mix aspects of that up, because by the end of the game, it does kind of get backburnered, because. Mm-hmm. You know, you're more concerned with killing the evil demon, not so much the what these petty nobles are fighting about.
Yeah, it's like all the worst parts of Game of Thrones. Just a bunch of family names and characters you don't know, and mm-hmm. you don't know why they're fighting.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
It's like, is Dicegard and Zalbog on the same side? Fighting?
Have they met other? Before?
It's like the first half of the Bible.
Yeah. And it is very religious focused, so.
Yes. Yes, it is. This is based on the real life War of the Roses, I guess, which is English history. Mm. So, I don't know. This did not come out on the NES or the Super NES, so I'm not sure if the British played it. But if so, they might know more about it. Todd, was there anything else you wanted to say before we moved on here?
Yeah, before we move on, I have, you know, I think it's obvious that Steve likes this game. I like this game. Huel might like this game if he ever plays it. But I do have two reasons here why FF Tax is the most best game of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The first one is titled My Number One Greatest RPG of All Time. By Kin 69.
Oh,
there are a lot of great RPG games out there, like FF7, Zelda 3, Chrono Trigger, Suikoden 1 and 2, Secret of Mana, to name a few. But none can top FF Tactics for PS1. It's my number one RPG of all time. I really like the jobs/class system. 18, if I remember correctly. Ninja and Summoner is a must. The game is quit hard if you didn't level up, get a higher job/class, or worst, decline on count or landu to join your quest halfway through chapter 4. Fuck. His Holy Knight skill is indeed second to none. It would have been perfect if the game were a little longer, but you can get up to 70 hours of gameplays if you try to get all jobs / classes. And all this is one of the greatest games with great stories, challenging enemies, and so much twists and turns. 5 stars.
Wow.
Ooh. Nice.
All right, next one is titled A Game Lost in the Dust by David. Get my picture. I was 11 and a huge fan of FF games. So I say I might as well complete this collection with the famous FFT. So I buy this game. Obviously, the shopper man says, "Hey, would you like the strategy guide?" And I thought I had a lot of store credit, so why not? As I left, I noticed this was the same situation with the game Evolution, and I bought the strategy guide and with it, and in the end, I hated it. Enough about that. The second I saw the beginning, I knew I was in for a good game, and the beginning battle was amazing. I ignored the strategy guide. I had so much fun.
Oh, no.
In Afer, that game became ferocious in Magic City of Garland. Yes, yes, sounds stupid for you tactic geeks, but I'm bad at strategy-based games. And after that, I had no clue, absolutely no clue of the job point system, and I played till Swiggy Woods and lost and thought it was hopeless. 2 months later, I picked it up and looked at the battle system thing and then lose and put it down. To this date, I picked it up again, and I have used the strategy guide, which I'm proud to say, and this game is amazing. I'm enjoying every minute, and the guide is so helpful for me. I highly recommend this, everyone. This game storyline is a very depressing one, but if you're good at tactics, buy it, and you're in the story slightly more, and you're bad at tactic battles, especially based, then buy the strategy guide. It'll be needed. Thank you for reading. Buy it. 5 stars.
Huh. Big seller of that strategy guide.
Oh, yeah. Wow. He didn't use it, and then he did. 5 stars.
Wow. That was a magical review.
Really was.
Yeah. Oof.
Hmm.
I would definitely give this one 5 stars, by the way.
It's a 5-star game.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to move along to the email portion of the show. Todd, did you receive any emails?
I did. I did indeed receive an email. And this one is from a new writer. Always like those new writers. And they write, "Dear YPB, what's the name of that one Sonic game where you have to underwater to do something or go to the other side of something? Sorry if it's confusing. Can't really recall much. Anyway, it's like if you stay underwater too long, you'll die. Unless you go to the bubble thing to get oxygen, that is. From supersonicfan89@yahoo.com.
Wow.
Well, wait a second. How much of a Sonic fan are they if they can't remember that? I feel
also, are they a Sonic fan or are they a supersonic fan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It could be the old b-ball team.
Yeah.
Oh, good call. Yeah. That's probably it. They probably just really like Sean Kemp.
Absolutely.
In fact, it's probably one of Sean Kemp's kids. So
it could be Sean Kemp.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
He's not up to anything.
No. So I think the answer to their question, though, is all of them. So.
Yeah. I think most of them, if you go underwater too long, you die.
Every single Sonic game has an underwater stage.
Where you gotta go fast and get out of the water.
You have to go underwater to do something or go to the other side of something.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole concept of Sonic is to go to the other side.
That's true, yeah.
It's a side scroller. So
yeah.
It's kinda all of them.
It is by far my least favorite part of the Sonic games is watching the life slowly drain out of Sonic while the clock ticks and he dies. So
I hate the underwater stages in Sonic.
Yeah.
They're bad.
Yeah. Underwater stages are like ice stages where every game has like one or two levels that are underwater and they're awful. They're always awful. Well,
I mean, at least Mario, you're not like depressed while you're playing it. It's kind of fun. In a way.
Yeah.
In the old Mario series.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, and the Mario ones have that great music.
True.
Yeah.
The underwater music in Mario, I think 2 or maybe mm-hmm. 3. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Or is it 1? It might even be 1.
It's 1,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, the 1. Guys, think, it's think, 1!
That was like 140 episodes ago. can't be expected to remember that.
Yeah.
Also, that's a game where you do not drown if you're underwater. None of the Mario games. You can just keep swimming and swimming. Oh, except for 64. Never mind.
Yeah, 64 is different. But we're not quite there yet. It's going to be a while.
What about when you're throwing caps around? Can you go underwater?
Chucking caps? Yeah. But similar to where it's limited, like in 64.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not using your health bar. It's just a different bar pops up.
Ah. Gotcha.
Yep. Chuck them caps.
But I'm sure you could chuck a cap on a fish or something in that game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're limited while Mario, but as long as you Mario your cap onto a fish, then you're free to go. You're free to swim as far as you can see.
Into the sea?
The sea.
Ah, nice. Well, Huel, did you receive a mail this week?
I got an email. It's as follows. Dear YPB, I liked your show about Resident Evil 2 last week. While your coverage was thorough, I think you guys glossed over how cool it was to play as a cop in the game. You get a gun and a cop car and get to zoom and pew-pew all over the place. Plus, plus people respect you automatically. And you can tell them what to do. Leon could be the best, but I know there's others. So I wanted to ask, what's your favorite cop in a video game? This is from Blue Lives Matter at AOL.com. that is our writer. So, what do you guys think?
That's a tough ask.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what the one I thought of is you're not really a cop. You're more of a detective, but L.A. Noire.
Yeah, he's a cop on the beat, right?
He's got a badge. He's a detective.
He's a member of the law enforcement there.
Yeah, he's got a badge. Mm-hmm. That counts.
I'm reminded of the game it's called Sleeping Dogs.
Ooh.
And it is basically like Grand Theft Auto, but in Hong Kong.
Is it the one where you're after the mob?
You're after
infiltrate the Hong Kong triads.
Mm.
Yeah, you've been in like San Francisco for like 10 years or something, and they send you back to Hong Kong to like infiltrate the triads. And basically like the way you do this is basically murdering people.
You gotta keep your cover, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do that by murdering people. And it's weird because there are achievements tied to running people down with cars, which I thought was kind of odd, but, also, this is a Square Enix game, so it's also really odd that they decide to go in this direction for a little bit. But yeah, you play as a cop in that one, and I can't think of any other cop games right now, so I guess that's my answer by default.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to go
And also, just real quick, Emma Stone is in it. Like she what? She she provides a voice in it.
Oh, yeah, is it actually a character inside the game? That'd be pretty cool.
Is it a a husky voiced police informant?
It is his love interest, Amanda Cartwright. There's also Lucy Liu. not Bart Samson. Lucy Liu provides them their voice.
Interesting.
Well, the one I was going to go with is an all-time classic video game character, and she is a cop, and she hails from China, and her name is Chun-Li. She is indeed a police lady.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
Deep cut. Well, not deep cut, but I would not have remembered that she's a cop.
Why? Just because she doesn't wear the traditional police uniform?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I got one quick mail this week. Did you guys seriously try to take credit for the term tank controls, a term that nearly every person that talks about the early RE games uses? That's from Sriracha Flash on Twitter.
Wow.
Sriracha Flash.
Yeah. More like...
It's on blast. Sriracha
Flash. It's a hot... Blast. That's a spicy take from Sriracha, Sriracha Blast.
Yes. Well, his handle is 22_RTI, but his title is MCM/Sriracha Flash.
Flash.
And I kind of claim credit for this one. I think Teebs mentioned that. And then I laughed uproariously at this, I believe, because I had never heard it before, because I don't know anything about Resident Evil. Whereas I'm assuming, Teeb, you may have known that they're called tank controls.
I've possibly read it somewhere, but I don't
hang on, like,
follow what the kids are saying.
Sriracha Flash doesn't know that Teeb could have easily invented this term in 1996, and he just brings it up again on the podcast because we talked about the game. I mean, Teeb was on the Usenet forums and all that.
Yeah,
he was out there coining terms.
Alt.binaries.cooldudes. I was out there coining terms.
Alt.re2.controls discussion.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you don't know that. You don't know things, Sriracha. Stop assuming, Sriracha. Ooh. Flash.
Wow, nice.
That's what you get.
Well... I've let's move right along to my portion. New news. Music pending. So three quick items. First off, as people do every year for the Super Bowl, they use Tecmo Bowl or Tecmo Super Bowl to simulate it with they have roster packs for them now with emulators that are pretty easy to simulate the games. Huel, do you want to offer a prediction for the Tecmo Bowl prediction?
They're using updated rosters?
Yes, they are.
I still got to say Eagles.
Ah, this score is Eagles 16, Patriots 10.
Yeah.
At least according to Tecmo Bowl, by the way, James White is going to carry the ball 19 times for 60 yards. Tom Brady is going to throw 45%, 81 yards, one interception. I guess
81 yards.
I guess Nick Foles is your MVP. 36%, 106 yards, two interceptions.
Wow.
So defensive struggle in this one. It's the fact that Tecmo Bowl, the default is normally like 3 to 5 minute quarters. So
yeah, I guess that makes sense. You're not going to throw that many yards.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
It's not until you get to the Super Nintendo one you can actually have like 12 minute quarters. So good news for you, Huel. Start playing the parade.
Hey, if Tom Brady throws 81 yards at the Super Bowl, I like our chances.
I do too. So also the Bill and Ted 3 movie is still coming along.
All right.
That is a thing that is still happening.
Is that the entire news update? It's still a thing.
Yeah, because that it's been happening every couple of months where like this time it's the writer saying, "Oh yeah, we're still working on it." So it's just mentioning that it is still a thing that they are doing. And then finally in our Kickstarter update, this one is Atari launches crowdfunding campaign for Roller Coaster Tycoon Switch. Now I'm not entirely sure. So they released a new version of Roller Coaster Tycoon. It's a free to play game on I think Facebook and phones and that kind of thing. So here's their ask. Their ask is for between 10,000 and 1.07 million.
Okay. A narrow window.
And if they hit that target, they'll put Roller Coaster Tycoon on the Switch. Huh. So
I guess they really know how to budget. That's a pretty wide range there.
Yeah.
What's weird is that it seems like it's a game that would have no trouble getting private funding to be ported to the Switch, right?
Yeah.
Why do they need to go to the public Kickstarter to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Don't make no sense.
I don't know.
Well, you know what I'd like to kickstart? Roller Toaster Tycoon.
Oh. Ooh.
Now that's a game.
Well, the...
You have a toaster oven on wheels?
Yes.
The only unique angle to this is the fact that at certain points, you actually get equity in the game. So if you
this pledge, is on Fig, is it?
It is. It's on startengine.com. So you invest any amount into the campaign with $250 as a minimum and earn your pro rata share of 50% of profits until you make 120% of your original investment.
Hmm.
So basically it's saying if you put money into this, we will return your investment when the game is released.
Up to a certain point, if they are making money.
Mm-hmm. And after that, you get 25% of profits prorated. So, I don't know. We'll have to talk to our attorney about this when he's on. Maybe have him weigh in. But it also, by the way, this is only assuming that the game gets profits. The last Roller Coaster Tycoon game was not well received at all. So, we might have to wait for that. But yeah, that's new news for the week. Todd, did you have any asks this week?
Ooh, you know what? We do have somebody that needs our help. So let us ask the sweet boys. All right. Send in all your asks to parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and we will keep it anonymous unless otherwise requested. This one's from Anonymous. And I'm going to read this one in an assumed voice.
Oh God. All right.
All right. I mean, just to get the accents down, there's certain words that sound better in different accents. So here's this one. Is this cheating? If I shag me ex one last time before I get married, I'm planning on meeting him for one more night after my Hindu. I haven't seen him for nearly 10 years, but he was the best sex I ever had. Excuse me. And he would definitely be up for it again. Is it really cheating if it's just one time and I'm not married yet?
I'm having a hard time placing the accent.
Yeah.
Went in and out.
Yeah, it's so seamless.
I think you picked it up at the end. At the end, I think you went and nailed it.
Yeah. I would think it's cheating if you slept with your ex one last time before getting married.
It's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, even if she's a skank at the bar, it still counts.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you wear a mask, that might be okay. So then it's like not really you. But I guess the only exception.
Change your voice. See, like I just did, I was a complete...
Yeah. I thought Todd brought someone else into the room to read that letter.
Yeah. If you wear a mask, you become El Generico.
Yes.
You're a completely different person.
Completely different person. So yeah. Maybe write Todd back and get some voice lessons from him.
Yeah, then you can... And, I mean, do it like we treated our childhood trauma and compartmentalize it and tuck it away.
Oh yeah, exactly. As soon as it's over, forget it ever happened. You know, that kind of thing. So yeah, wear a mask and change your voice. And you should be all right.
Yeah. Oh, this sounds like it's going to be a great marriage.
Yeah, I'm sure you two will be very happy.
Yes. Please don't have kids. Todd, was there anything else you wanted to add before we signed off here tonight?
Sure. This is one little nugget. My father once told me Count Lando is the only one we can trust.
Oh. That was good of him. Huel, anything you want to add here?
This may come as a shock, but the archer is the only job that can handle bows and crossbows.
Oh. Ooh. Good point. On that note, here's a little snifferoo for next week's game.
This is the Noid. He loves to ruin your pizza. If you've ever gotten cold pizza, a squashed pizza, or pizza that just wasn't ripe, the Noid did it. But at Domino's Pizza, we avoid the Noid. So when you want hot, delicious quality pizza delivered in less than 30 minutes, Domino's Pizza delivers. One call does it all.